You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. Hi, everyone. My guest today is Amy Berryman. Amy is a playwright and actor based in New York City. She and I have known each other peripherally through the community for the last 8 or 9 years, I believe. We were cast in a reading together years ago, and we've kept in touch. I've been so impressed watching her develop her writing skills over the years, and her persistence and groundedness as an artist is something I really admire. She had her first production of her play, Walden, earlier this year in the West End in London. It was in a socially distanced production by Sonia Friedman Productions, The Reemerge Season, and it's also just finishing up a run at Theatre Works Hartford. I believe that finishes on August 29th, if you get a chance to see it in person, or you can view it virtually as well. So thank you, Amy, for your time and your honesty. You can check out what Amy's up to at www.amy-berryman.com. I hope you all enjoy the 178th episode of The Compass. But I'm going to dive in to the deep end with the first question, and then we'll see where it takes us. Okay.
Okay.
So what do you do to try to keep from going to the dark side as an artist?
I think there's like two kinds of dark sides. One that feels really productive and good, and as a writer, I need to like use it. One that drawing from all of the pain and, you know, turmoil, anxiety, like putting all of it into the work. And then there's the dark side that's just, I feel like it's just the closest to meeting like a demon or pure evil or something, because it it feels like this voice that just compares me to any person I might compare myself to, people I never would have imagined I could compare myself to. It tells me I'm a failure, it's really intense. And I think for me that one of the main ways is not avoiding it and going through it, or like confronting it and dealing with it when it comes up, because I can really easily just avoid, like, you know, pick up my Instagram, numb on my phone, or drink about it, or not actually deal with it. And so through actually writing or sitting and crying and feeling all the painful things, I feel like is sort of how I'm able to move through it. I also do things like listen to podcasts with interviews with writers and other artists that are inspiring, and also just community, I think, is the big one too, like not isolating myself in it. I think that in 2020 I really found myself isolating in my dark side moments, rather than, and when I would reach out to like the writers groups that I'm in, my friends, family, that's, you know, actually connecting about it, my therapist, therapy, main way to not go to the dark side. That I think just facing it is and also knowing that it will always be a part of the journey. But when it comes up, it always just feels like, wait, no, I thought I was past this. Like I was, right. I was past this.
I think so, it's easy to forget yeah. too, that most people feel it. It's easy to say like, I'm the only person
yes.
who feels this way. The only person yeah. who does the comparison, or the only person who's so down on themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which just is yeah. not true.
And I think it also really comes up for me when I've done something really vulnerable or brave. It almost is like I have a vulnerability hangover or something where I feel ultra sensitive the next day. Like I went and saw my play this weekend and hadn't seen it at Theaters Hartford and hadn't seen it in a week. And it was wonderful. But the next day I was so just like, I could feel it. Cause even though I've seen it many times over the past several months, which is a whole thing we can talk about, but it still is just so exposing to sit and like listen to words that you and kind of exposing and scary to claim that space. Yeah. There's a lot to
say. I can imagine. yeah, I definitely know that feeling you're talking about where maybe there's like adrenaline that night and then the next morning you're like, was it really what I thought it was? What was that feeling?
Yeah. It's interesting.
How are you? Are you in New York right now?
I'm currently in New York. Mm-hmm. Yes, just through Friday. I've been, you know, a little nomadic since April. I was in London and then I was in Hartford and I've been in New York for 2 weeks. I gave up my apartment before I left for London and so I've been just sort of bouncing around. So right now I'm in my friend's apartment in the West Village, which has been really lovely. And how am I? I'm good.
Are you now? Yeah. How are you now? And how have you been throughout the pandemic? I feel like, and then we can kind of talk about everything that's been happening with your play this year too, which must be like such a different kind of pandemic experience.
Yeah.
But the first question is just, how are you? It's insane.
I'm really good overall. I mean, it's the kind of thing, you know, I'm healthy, my family's healthy, there's all these very basic things that you feel so grateful for. And I mean, my pandemic, I lived in a studio apartment, which was such a like blessing at the time. I'm such a social person and it was such a haven and felt like a big achievement to like be able to rent a studio while I was working as a bartender. You know, it was just such a great thing. But then it became just this dark side place, you know, so isolated. And, you know, I took it all very seriously and maybe was too isolated. Like maybe I could have risked going on more walks with my friends and, mm-hmm. but you know, you just don't know. So I feel like the first many months, I got to be pretty depressed and my brother came and rescued me and brought me to Indiana where his family and his, you know, my nephews live. And so I got to be there in June and a little bit of July. And that was really, really helpful. And then came back, started working at the bar again that I was bartending at, which was like so weird to kind of go back to that service industry thing in the midst of a pandemic. There's so much we didn't know. I was really scared, like being outdoors, like who knew that, you know, it probably was fine. I don't know. But at the time I was really freaked out and it was sort of weird. I also just felt like there needed to be a new, etiquette or something. And so I made this Instagram post that went viral a few days after I started working back at the bar. And I was really just like trying to like figure out a way out. I was so angry and just felt like, wow, this doesn't feel sustainable. Like, you know, I've done this for 10 years and I don't know if I can do this anymore. And also I'd been so like unsure about what my theatrical career would be. I sort of felt like, okay, this production of my play was going to be in this theater in Philadelphia, got canceled. you know, maybe I can, I don't know what the future of theater is. I joined a group of screenwriters trying to learn how to write better for screen and TV, and was really trying to focus on that. And then I kind of had this miracle happen where my agents called me like maybe a week after I started working at the bar again, and said that Sonia Friedman, who's this huge UK and American producer, and her company had read my play Walden and wanted to produce it on the West End in this socially distanced theater festival that they were forming. And mine was sort of the first one that they picked.
And
it was just this,
that
like,
timing is so incredible.
It was so incredible and also didn't feel real. I didn't understand what they were even telling me. I was just like, what could this call even be about? Like,
yeah,
there's
like,
no
how
theater.
Did they even get my
what,
play?
Yes. So it, I didn't believe it was real until I sort of talked to Sonia and talked to the folks over there and started to kind of believe it was real. But even then, like, it was supposed to happen in November. Of course, then it got delayed. And there have just been so many points in my artistic career, and I'm sure everyone's artistic career, where we think this is going to be the thing. Like, oh, mm-hmm. think something's actually going to change. And there were so many times that happened that, you know, it didn't change, or it I got close to something and didn't get it, or whatever. So I just kept feeling like knowing this would be so beyond anything I had dreamed or wished for. Like, I had, you know, had a goal of, you know, I'd love to have my play open off Broadway, which I still would love that to happen, but I just never imagined the West End, this group of like legendary people that I worked with. And so then the pandemic sort of became this like desperate anxiety and hope for many months that I, you know, I did quit my job at the bar because I thought I was going in November and wanted to give myself some time off in between. And then it got pushed back and I went to Seattle, where I'm from, for a little while and just hung out with my parents, which I was really lucky to get to do. Then came back to New York and it did end up happening and I did end up going, and it was incredible. But there was just, I mean, so many months that I just drove everyone in my life crazy because I couldn't really tell that many people and I didn't know. Right. And it just sounded
so uncertain,
bonkers. Like, it sounded bonkers that I was like, yeah, my play is going to happen in a theater during this. But like, it was.
They're like, sure, it is, really. Amy.
Exactly. Like, that's how I felt. And I'm sure that's how, I don't know. It's so
how did it work?
Miraculous.
Was it just like a very limited amount of audience members, or?
It was only about, it was about 50% capacity each night. You know, we got a really good pocket of time because the UK was under lockdown for so long. So ours are, it happened right as things were reopening. So like when I landed, outdoor dining had opened for the first time in like maybe 4 or 5 months, which ours was such a different level of lockdown. Like, theater has been locked down, but like the producers over there are have been very determined from the get-go to make things happen. So we caught this really lovely pocket of time where cases weren't, you know, I was checking the cases every day while I was over there during rehearsal. I mean, we were in a rehearsal room without masks. I mean, some of our stage management team had masks, and like there were moments we were masked, but we were really free to work in a really beautiful way. And then the audience members in the theater and everything were masked. And but yeah, I mean, it really felt, although it wasn't packed or anything, it felt really nice. I mean, and amazing. I, you know, miss theater so much, as everyone does or has been. So yeah, it was very amazing and intense. So, and a sort of a strange moment to have this really huge career
thing,
because yeah, there's just a lot that comes along with that of guilt and joy and imposter.
Yeah, like, wasn't anyone in your family able to come see it? I know you had a few friends, but
yes, they did. There's a lot of really intense quarantine rules, or there were, but my parents did quarantine and got to see the play, which was really, really special. Oh, nice. Yeah,
that's great. Yeah, that must be strange to have such a moment of joy within a time of such uncertainty and not really be able to share it with everybody in the way that you normally would.
Yeah, it definitely, like, it, I, you know, there's so many more people that would have been able to come and see, but it, at the same time, it just, you know, there was one preview that we had to cancel because we had a sort of a scare that was really overblown, but we thought, okay, if someone has been exposed, then we should, you know, be overly cautious. And, you know, at that moment, it just makes you realize, like, this is so precarious. It's so delicate. You know, there's so much I can worry about. Is that moment working? Is it all, like, you know, there's so many little details that I worry about, but then ultimately it's like, let's just do it. Like, I'm so grateful to get to, like, have it seen and make something. So yeah, this has been a very wild, I mean, entire pandemic, obviously, but the past 4 months have been really wild.
And now you're working on the same play in Connecticut, you said?
Yes. So it has this outdoor production at TheaterWorks Hartford, which has been really incredible, working with Man Teo as the director, who, you know, we'd originally thought it would just be like we'd build the stage indoors and film it and be streaming. But we kind of caught, again, this really lovely moment of, well, we could be together outdoors. And what if we built the play is set in a cabin, like in the middle of the wilderness? Like, what if we built a cabin? Like, what if we had the actors mic'd and have the audience have headphones so that it feels really intimate and not, not so, because it's a very intimate play. And so you aren't projecting like Shakespeare in the Park style for this play that should have really intimate moments. So that has been really special. It was very intense to like immediately dive into another rehearsal process, having just done it. And so I'm very oversaturated with this play and so grateful to be oversaturated with it.
Well, that was my question is, have you had that experience before of having multiple productions of the same play, or is this the first one where you've been able to work on it so closely multiple times?
Well, that is what is so beyond about all of it, is the West End production was my first production of a play that I wrote. And so it was this very, very high level debut is the word they, you know, keep using. And so it was terrifying. I didn't have a process. Like, I'm an actor also, so I've been in obviously many productions as an actor, but I didn't have a process for, I didn't know what it was to like let go of a play and give it over to the director, give it over to the actors. That was terrifying. I didn't have a process for, do I want to read reviews or not? I didn't know. So there's a lot of things I did that I was just sort of like, you know, baptism by fire, learning as I go and trying to act like very calm, normal, and I was freaking out. So not only had I never experienced this, but then going to the next production, I mean, I don't know, definitely in 2021, I feel so, so lucky to like have had that experience and then have this other production here. You know, there were very different productions, very different groups of people. And you just learn so much from both of them. And what's been really beautiful is that I feel that the play sort of stands on its own on both sides of the, you know, on in England and then here in this production that feels so different. But yeah, it's been really big learning curve, very intense.
That's so exciting. When did you start writing?
I think I guess in, I mean, I've always been a writer, but was so focused on acting for so long and had never tried playwriting. But as a kid, I like wrote a novel when I was like six or something. You know, I was very creative and into writing. But in 2015, I was in a play in the Humana Festival. And I think just like that exposure to like the world of new plays and playwriting was really exciting to me. And I was really depressed right after it was over and like put myself into a playwriting class and sort of put that into the work and kind of just never looked back. I mean, I think that it's just been, it's been a really great feeling of agency as an artist, whereas, you know, as a actor, we have to ask to do anything, it feels like. So that has been really empowering. And it's just felt like with acting, there's been a lot of doors that have, that I've knocked on for a long time that have never opened. And with writing, it's like they just swung open. So yeah, I think we know each other, my friend Liba Weinberg and I, we know each other much further back, but you came to Liba's in Red Walden once.
I did, yeah.
Very early, which was so kind, and that was a very, very early
It was probably like 2017 or something.
Yeah, like I started writing it in 2016, and I think, yeah, it was probably 2017. And we were, you know, both always going out for the same roles, me and my friend Liba, and we sort of started writing together and having these readings at her house to kind of give each other deadlines and actually make things happen. And so yeah, it's kind of just I've just started focusing on that because that's where all the doors have opened, and it's just been it's been really great.
I love that you've found a way to have community like within your writing.
Yes.
Because it can seem like such a solo thing, which is amazing in some ways. Like it gives you that agency, like you said. But the fact that you and Liba were giving each other accountability or the writing classes or writing groups that you're a part of, I think that's really lovely.
I think that's what I like best about it, is that I do have this introverted side that feels fulfilled by the actual, sometimes horrible and really hard writing process. But then getting to be in community with the writing and get to be working with actors and directors and, or just other writers in a writing class. But I do think that that is so important for me. And, you know, going back to not going to the dark side, I feel like that is kind of the only way to, but then that comes with such vulnerability and fear by just like having to actually share the work. But the reward is, to me, huge.
Do you feel any sort of pressure to go down this new road as a writer and kind of close the door on acting, or are you at peace with kind of pursuing both at the same time and accepting like that they're both an active part of your artistry right now?
I really despise the pursuit of acting. I just find it so, so awful and so disheartening, and I just so I like the pursuit
that it's,
of writing.
I hate that it's so different from actually doing the work.
I know.
It really
so, like,
is.
For me, it's I don't enjoy, you know, having to watch myself when I'm learning to get, when I've been in classes to learn to audition for on camera. It's like unhealthy for me almost. And maybe I'll get to a place where that's not the case. I think when I've made a short film that I was in or was a part of the process of making something, it's a little easier because it feels like you have more control. Maybe it's just about control that I really hate not having any control as an actor. I don't know. but I think that, so for now, I am actually going to be in a film that this writer's group that formed in COVID, we like wrote a series of shorts that kind of all form a short feature, and we're going to shoot it in October in LA, and I am going to be a small part in that, so that will be great. But I think I'm not doing anything like pursuing acting right now. I don't know, sometimes I feel like I should be, or but what is should, you know? I feel like I'm just, I continue I really love the role of writer at the moment, and creating the world and creating the opportunities, because you still get to be in communion with actors and people that, you know, are just so thrilling to be around and interesting. And there's something about just like having your work not be dependent on your corporeal body that is really freeing to me. And I so respect actors. Like, I think actors are heroes and so generous to like put their bodies out on the line, and you know, and I know actors that get so much from that, but to me it's been really freeing to sort of divorce myself from that through writing. And it's just something that I think for a long time I think that comes along with the dark side of being an actor for me, is the comparison and the, oh, I'll never be, you know, this movie star type of actor, or like this, you know, XYZ person I could compare myself to. And it just feels, there's such high pressure from, like, there's already so much pressure on women about how you look, and then to add being an actor on top of it, and having gone to conservatory, and it's really freeing to have my art divorced from that. So I enjoy that.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I was going to say, even for female actors, it's like so much even more intense. And I love like a really good, like physical theater. Like, that's a different thing. But just the pressure that's put on the observation of your body as a woman in general is just so intense.
Even like actors have to break their hearts every night on stage. Like, you have to just, it's so intense and so beautiful. But I think, and there is part of me that I am a really emotional person, and I wonder if I do need that outlet, but it's just been interesting to kind of, you know, in some ways, okay, in like this rehearsal process in Hartford, it's like, I've done a lot of the work already. There's still so many challenges, but it's so, and so many things to figure out as a team and tweaks to make and everything, but it's kind of nice to have been like, oh, yep, I broke my heart when I wrote this. Here you go. Like, I already did it. Now you all do it.
Your turn.
It's interesting. But I do think being an actor so informed my writing, and just wanting to give actors really great roles to chew on, and kind of knowing the sort of roles that I was attracted to, and sort of writing from there. So,
praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
How has your family taken in your choice to be an artist for your living, and then now this kind of pivot to writing?
Well, my father is an actor, writer, director, jack of all trades artist. So I grew up mostly in Seattle, but from ages 1 to 7, we lived in Texas, where he taught theater at a university. And so I kind of grew up, like, have early memories of him doing Suzuki. And, you know, like, it's all been kind of, I've known theater from a young age. And I think my mom did at some point have sort of a, are you serious? Like, our kids are going to be actors. Are you joking? Like, moment. But I think he was like, what? My dad was like, what do you want her to do? Like, this is what she wants to do. And I've been so lucky that they have been very supportive of me.
What does your mom do?
My mom's a speech pathologist. So she's like very emotional. Our whole family is very emotional, like breeds good actors, I think. But
That's not so foreign to what you're doing either.
Totally. Study of speech. With language. Yes, totally. But they've just been sort of thrilled by the pivot to writing. Like, I think they can see that I am happier overall. So
That's great. Do you have any mentors who have been helpful to you in this process of finding this part of your artistic life?
Yes. Jessica Dickey, who I think you know. Mm-hmm. Jessie, I took her writing classes so many times. Like, I just maybe am the most repeat offender of her writing classes. I don't know if she'll be doing them again anytime soon, but that's where I wrote my first play, Through Your Summer. It's where I sort of finished writing Walden. I did a revision of Walden in that class. So I feel like she has been, and she was my acting coach before that. So I feel like, and she's an amazing actor, writer, and sort of following her journey as an artist has been so inspiring. And she's such a huge part of me continue to be an artist at all. I got to be in her play, The Convent, that was off Broadway, that like directed by Daniel Talbot, who I ended up being like very close with him and his wife, and kind of finding a new group of artists through getting to do that show. So she has been a huge, amazing mentor. Erin Courtney, who wrote the play I was in the Humana Festival, is also like such an important playwright to me, an incredible writer, and has just been so supportive of me, you know, throughout all of it. And and then Daniel Talbot, Addie Talbot, like those folks. I feel like all my friends are my mentors, because they also just have to deal with all my anxieties and kind of guide me through all of it. But I think mentors are so important.
When your best friends are people that you admire, they do turn into mentors. Absolutely. Kind of. Yeah. They're your peers and your mentors.
Yeah. So true.
Do you ever find yourself like, I don't know how, what I'm saying here. I want to ask you about like giving yourself permission. Mm-hmm. Like, do you ever find that you have a hard time giving yourself permission to take a risk or permission to take up mm-hmm. space in the room, that kind of like imposter syndrome issue that everyone talks about? How do you deal with feelings like that?
I mean, I do not know how I deal with it, like, but I just do, I guess. I feel it all the time. I felt it so intensely in London. You know, I was working with Ian Rickson, who's this legendary director and incredible actors, and I remember at some of the final runs in the rehearsal room, it's a very emotional piece, but Ian had sort of like injected it with like all this ferocity and emotion. And it was just like, this is so big. This is too much. I just kept thinking that and telling like my friends that I think it's too much. Like, I think it's too big. It's all these things. I was panicking, and I think, and Ian was sort of like, you're going to want this in the big theater. Like, you're going to want, you know, just stay the course. You're going to be grateful for this. Even in the theater, I was like, it's too big. It's too much. But what I have processed as a result, because I kind of eventually calmed down and was able to see it for what it was. But I was just afraid of this thing I had written. I was afraid of like my voice taking up all of this space and being the sort of cause of these giant performances. You know, I was so scared of that more than anything, I think. And I think then it became a fear of letting go of the play. It was just like new fear after new fear as soon as I got over the one. But I think that with the imposter syndrome, I mean, I'm a big fan of like the artist's way and the affirmations in the artist's way. I do those a lot. Like, I do, you know, I am willing to be seen and all these things. I just like repeat writing these things over and over just to kind of center me. I mean, I have to work really hard to not kind of go to a place that's in the imposter syndrome world. And I think that, but I think moving through that experience in London made me better able to also like sit more calmly and with more ease in the rehearsal room in Hartford. And I think we'll continue to, it just was such a like,
yeah,
high intensity experience.
That's such a big jump from being used to like doing readings in living rooms and on Zoom,
yes,
and to suddenly, mm-hmm, being like, no, this is the venue that we've always been aiming for.
Yeah. 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 It was very, very incredible. And it was just interesting that the words too much were the things that just kept coming up for me. And I think that that was actually more about me and more, and I think as women, or me, I should, can also just speak for my experience. Like it's taken a long time to really be able to own my voice and own the fact that I have things to say. And
Yeah. Are there any lessons that you've learned over the last couple years that you're really proud of that you wouldn't mind sharing?
Lessons that I am proud of.
It could be something small.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like, yes, I mean, I'm sure there's so many. I think, I don't know if I have achieved this, but a step in the right direction as far as trusting in the right timing of like the universe and not my timing. Just, you know, if the play had happened in November, it would have been shut down. We caught this beautiful moment in time where we were able to do it safely. And I think also just trusting in myself that there will be more work that, like, I'm sort of struggling right now with. I think I'm sort of desperate to write something else so that I can just move past this giant thing that just happened and be able to move and be like, okay, I did it. I wrote another play. Like, I've been working on a pilot and, you know, working on projects, but I kind of feel the need to just write any other play so that I can move past the fear. And so I think I'm learning right now, trusting that there will be more there. There will be more ideas. There will be more, and that I can give myself permission to take the time for it to come.
What sorts of things do you like to do to kind of refill your creative cup?
I think reading.
I guess it might be kind of different, like, right now in the pandemic than it normally would.
I know, right? Like normally, I mean, I am going to go see Passover tonight, which I'm really excited about.
Oh, yay.
But I think seeing other plays, seeing other, you know, reading novels, seeing other pieces of art that don't have to do with necessarily playwriting, but I guess also just taking, and as I'm saying it, I'm like, yeah, Amy, take time off and hang out with your friends, like fill your like chill out. Yeah, I mean, I think for me, just connection with other people that I love and who are important to me is a huge way of refilling. And yeah. I guess, seriously, as I'm saying this, I am just laughing at myself that I'm like, yeah, not put so much pressure on myself. That helps fill my cup up. I'm like, that's what I've been doing for like the past two however and plus weeks. Oh my God. So it's funny. It's a good
constant reminder. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I know we talked a little bit earlier about how you bartended for a long time and mm-hmm. you're not currently. But mm-hmm. how are you feeling about that kind of balance of art and commerce? What are some of the things over the years that kind of helped you figure that quilt out, figure out how to deal with, you know, not mm-hmm. necessarily making your living from your artistic work?
I mean, I think writing really helped me balance it because it felt like I was getting to pursue something that felt like an investment in myself. And acting, I guess maybe that's just me figuring out aligning like what I actually want or something, but okay, I might have to go back and answer this a different way because I'm not totally sure. I mean, it's so hard to make a living as an artist, and it's so hard to make a living in New York City. So I think, you know, that's sort of the first step is being able to feed yourself and being able to pay your rent. And I think however you can cobble that together is amazing and brilliant, and you've achieved so much when you can just do that, like so much. And I think for me, it took a long time to sort of find the job that allowed me to make the right amount of money and have the right amount of space for my art, which I kind of finally found in the final 5 years that I was doing it. But I also, you know, when I first moved to New York, I did a lot of temp work. I've done a lot of kind of random stuff to kind of cobble it all together. And I think finding, I don't know what I want to say about it. I just want to acknowledge that, like, it's so hard. It's so hard. And right now I'm still cobbling all of that together. Like, I'm teaching a playwriting class on Zoom that's mainly geared towards actors. Because I feel like even if actors, like for me, I find that when I commit to something or do something, all these other things happen in the universe. Like, there's some quote that sticks with me that's like, when you move, the universe moves too. And I find that even if you aren't going to become a playwright, if as an actor you want to like commit to taking a class in playwriting and just sort of seeing what that level of agency and creativity outside of your acting world can do, you know, I think something tends to happen, whatever that something may be. I really believe in that, which is woo-woo or whatever. But I think it can just kind of break open something inside. I just really believe that even if people don't think they're writers, like everyone has so much inside them. And I've just found in these classes, like, oh my gosh, this person that never even thought about writing before has this beautiful family story to tell or whatever it may be. And so I totally encourage people to, even if it's not writing, maybe it's painting or sort of doing something outside of your chosen form, I think can be really helpful.
Is this class you're teaching now, is that something that you organized on your own or was it through another organization?
It's something I organized on my own. It's something I've been wanting to do for a while. And then once Zoom became such a thing, I was like, well, this seems like a way to reach and connect with people that I want to see if I enjoy this. And I just sort of felt like I have an angle with just having been an actor who kind of transitioned to writing that maybe I could share with other people and maybe that would be helpful. So we're about to start a new session of it in like a week or two. And I'm going to do it intermittently. So, yeah.
Just for anyone who's listening, would you like post about that on Instagram or something when your class is coming?
Yes, I usually post about it on Instagram. Also, you know, I think my email is still on my website. Like, people could email me to ask about it or, I would love that. Yeah.
Okay, great. If you are feeling like you're in the dark side or really feeling stuck, are there any tangible things that you reach for again and again, like a book that you reread or music you listen to? Mm-hmm. I mean, you already spoke about reaching out to friends, but something mm-hmm. like that.
The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. Do you know this book?
I've heard of it. I don't think I've ever read it.
It's so good. And it's so tiny. It's like, it's the kind of thing you'll pick it up and read like five pages and want to start making something. Cause it's so, mm-hmm. it talks about resistance and this sort of unseen force that's out to get all of us and stop us from doing our artistic work, anything good for you. But it's so weirdly practical, even though it's sort of like metaphysical. But I, you know, sometimes I replay the same podcast interviews over and over. Sometimes I watch Elizabeth Gilbert's talk about creativity. I think that just the way she frames creativity as something outside of yourself and something you can, it's not all dependent on you as the artist, that you can show up and there's something outside of you that has to show up too. And I really enjoy the way that she frames that.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Because it is easy mm-hmm. to get down on yourself about like, oh, I'm not
yes.
the idea isn't coming. The creative, like I mm-hmm. be creative, you know.
It's so frustrating.
And that is a good way
yes.
to think about it.
Yeah. It's really nice to
that
just
it's not all inside
free yourself
of you.
A bit. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Those are two big ones.
Mm-hmm. And then the final question is, have you seen or taken in any piece of art recently that you want to recommend? I know you said you're seeing Passover.
Well,
I'm tonight.
Seeing Passover, which I recommend everyone sees.
I saw it.
I haven't seen this
Broadway.
Production yet.
Yeah,
I've read it, but I haven't actually seen it. But I know it's going to be amazing. Well, I'm watching Succession.
Oh yeah.
I'm so behind the world on Succession. I recommend it to everyone. I was like, I don't think I want to watch people be mean to each other for this long. But it's fascinating and it's
I
so
hear it's
good.
Really good.
The writing
I feel like
is
we've been
so
holding off
good.
Just mm-hmm. like another show about rich white people, but I've heard it's really
Absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely. But it's a little satirical. I mean, it's mm-hmm. quite satirical about like pointing at that. It's so absurd. It's like Shakespeare in a way to me, like just the structure and whatever. I'm deep in it, so I'm obviously it's not the be all end all art for sure, but it is pretty great. Yeah. Oh gosh, I'm trying to think if there's anything else. But I mean, mostly I've just been, you know. I feel like I watched a movie recently. Well, I can't. All the things I'm recommending are like so dark and so not recent.
Okay.
Like Midsommar, the film. I can't really recommend that to anyone. It's so dark, but I can't stop thinking about it. So there's just like I've been, you know, Never Rarely, Sometimes Always, incredible film. Anyway, those are all things that I've just been kind of swirling around in my mind. Also, you can stream my play Walden at Theaterworks Hartford starting in like 4 days, August 15th. So that's a piece of art that this production is so stunning. Like the design is stunning. The cast is amazing. And I just watched a cut of the streaming version that's very good. So
is it going to be up for very long?
I think it's through the 29th, which is when the play in person closes also.
Okay, great. Amy, thank you, thank you, thank you. This was such
thank
a pleasure.
You.
And
this
long
so
overdue.
Fun. Yes, really nice to catch up.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. If you find these conversations valuable to your life as an artist and would like to support the ongoing production of The Compass, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/thecompasspodcast. Pledges start at as little as $1 a month, and anything you can give would be greatly appreciated. Also, if you have a moment, please review and follow in iTunes. Every little bit helps other listeners to find the podcast. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Monic Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway, Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.